Title of my remarks is Depression, a Biblical Perspective. Here's an outline, a rough outline. I'm going to talk first about our limitations in approaching this subject here in this forum. We have an immediate consideration. We have to get on the table at once. We're going to take three case studies in the Bible and see what they have in common. I'm going to discuss then a fundamental root of melancholy, or depression, as it is sometimes called. We're going to spend some time talking about the cousins of depression, grief and worry. We'll have more biblical considerations and also the need to fulfill pertinent commands in the Bible. The presentation will also include some suggested readings. Now, if I suggest a reading to you, that doesn't mean everything in those books is truth. As always, you've got to chew the meat and spit out the bones. First, we have to recognize our limitations. There's roads I cannot go down. I cannot be making medical recommendations here. We're not going to do that. Romans 12:3, there's a sobering reminder. Paul says, "For I say through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as Elohim hath dealt to every man the measure of faith." I can only talk about this subject to the extent that I have the faith to do it, and also within the constraints and confines of this forum we're in. I'm supposed to be only up here for an hour. You know, gang, I only wanted to talk about one aspect of this subject, just one. And what happened is, talking to some of you and doing some digging, it started to spiral out with bunny trails and rabbit holes and all kinds of things. So I'm going to do the best I can today while not losing sight of my primary point. And I hope to make that clear to you. So here are some immediate considerations. Let's get this on the table. I'm not into beating people up. Mood swings are okay. Ups and downs are okay. It's all right. If every day is perfect, no day is perfect. In certain cases, prolonged melancholy is also okay. For example, mourning a great loss. Some of this stuff takes a while to get over. And no one is always at their best. We are not here to beat up people because they have mood swings or they're suffering grief or anything like that. Now, the stuff I'm going to be presenting to you, I've been working on for several years. But still, other things came along. Let's remember what we received, the wisdom in Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, verse 1 to 8. To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under heaven. Could we please pause and contemplate these very wise words? I want you to notice how some of these things are negative things. Some of these are positive things. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. Yeah, I'll vote for that. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. I pray about that all the time. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. I want to draw your attention to verse 4. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. There are times when we must weep and mourn. We will not beat up people because they're in a season in their life where they're mourning and weeping. But there also has to be a time to laugh and dance. That has to be in there too. My concern is those cases where there's altogether too much time in weeping and mourning. That's my concern. Sustained melancholy beyond a normal stretch. So to find a fundamental root of melancholy, There's likely others. There's chemical imbalances, other considerations. But the main thing I've wanted to talk about for a long time with you is one cause in particular. And we will now examine three case studies in the Bible and see what they have in common. The first one is King Shaul, commonly called Saul. Saul, though he was a king, he once tried to act as a priest and offer a sacrifice on his own. He didn't stay in his lane. Another time I talked with you all about strange fire. Some of this worship business, Yahweh wants it a certain way, and you're supposed to stay in your lane. Saul did not do that. He presumed to act as a priest, and he was harshly rebuked for it. Whew. He had an important victory over the Amalekites, and Saul disobeyed the instructions to destroy everything. Now, that whole thing with the Amalekites, that is a story all unto its own. You know, there are many commandments in the Bible to remember things. Remember Lot's wife. Remember the Sabbath. Remember the Amalekites. Practicing Jews every morning wake up and remember seven things, and I know one of them is to remember the Amalekites. They are the enemies of Yahweh. There's something indescribably vicious in that race that Yahweh wanted eliminated. But Saul kept King Agag alive, and he also kept many of the best animals alive. And he was rebuked for that. And another thing is he erected a monument to himself at Carmel. You'll find that in 1 Samuel 15:12. Man, this guy was going off the rails. In 1 Samuel 16, he was visited by an evil spirit from Elohim. Now the spirit of Yahweh departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from Yahweh tormented him. So the servants of Saul said to him, "Look, please, an evil spirit from Elohim is tormenting you. Please let our sovereign command your servants who are before you. Let them seek a man skilled in playing on the lyre. And when the evil spirit from Elohim is upon you, he can play on it and you will feel better." And the image there is an artist rendering of David brought into the courtroom to play for King Shaul to ease his spirit. People think music doesn't have an effect on you. Some people doubt the power of music. Now, Yahweh works in wonderful ways. And with King Shaul there having David playing for him, that meant David got to see how the throne room was operated. And when it was David's turn to take the throne, he already knew what was going on. The flow of that thing. Yahweh works in wonderful ways. But there's no doubt that Shaul was visited by melancholy. Let's talk about King Ahab's covetousness. We find this later on in 1 Kings 21, verse 1 to 4. And it came to pass after these things that Naboth the Jezreelite had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, hard by the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. And Ahab spake unto Naboth, saying, "Give me thy vineyard, that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it is near unto my house, and I'll give thee for it a better vineyard than it. Or, if it seem good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money." And Naboth said unto Ahab, "Yahweh forbid it me, that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto thee." You see, according to Yah's law, the inheritance of the blessings in the land, and the inheritance stays with the family. You can't give that away. You can't sell it. And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him, for he had said, "I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers." So he, Ahab, laid him down upon his bed and turned away his face and would eat no bread. Can you imagine how depraved this guy was? I can't have that vineyard. So he goes to bed, he faces the wall, and he doesn't want to eat. Covetous like that is kind of rare. But he doesn't even want to eat. He's so downcast. Another case of depression. Finally, Jonah. He was supposed to be a man on a mission, But now he's a man on omission. In Jonah chapter 1, he runs from Yahweh's assignment and takes a fishing boat to get away. Now, I'm wrong about that. I looked it up. I was wrong. It's not a fishing boat. It was one of these public transportation boats. It says he paid a fare to go to Tarshish. I was wrong to call it a fishing boat. Now, there's one other typo later on I'll have to apologize for, too. But anyway, he takes this public transportation boat, and a violent storm erupts, and he is still fast asleep deep in the boat. And he must be wakened. So the storm is raging. The boat's going this way and that. And he's just fast asleep down there. Upon learning of the storm, he confesses he is the cause of the storm. And he recommends that they who run the ship throw him overboard. The guy has lost the will to live. He's so depressed, the rocking of the boat doesn't bother him. He's miserable. Throw me overboard. There are cases of depression I know of. I can only speak to them a little bit. I know there are certain cases of melancholy where the people are suicidal. I'm not prepared to address that at length. I'd have to pray really hard to even find if I'm qualified to. But I'll tell you what I do know about that. It's really not the main part of today's message, but I do feel compelled to say something about it. For those of you who have lost all interest in life and are thinking of ending your life, one thing I know is virtually everybody has contemplated suicide at one time in their life. And that same majority of people have quickly said, no, that's crazy. I can't do that. I can't do that. I know there's cultures in the world where if things go a certain way against your will, that you are expected to take your own life. That's foreign to Yahweh's spirit. He is the Elohim of life. He is the Elohim of the living. But you should think about those who are affected when you take your life. And there are places in this world where you are needed. You could start out small, cleaning up litter from the street where you live. You might find somebody in your space who needs a friend. You could volunteer at a soup kitchen. If you can't think of places where you're needed, you should think harder. But we do know that when people are toying with the idea of suicide, that they do get over it. The feeling does pass. And though I won't be dwelling on that level of melancholy, that feeling does go away. And it may be possible some of the things I'm talking about here speak to your situation. So I ask everybody in the sound of my voice, try to extract what you can from this. Because when somebody takes their life, it's devastating for everybody you leave behind, even for people who don't know you. But there's so much to be done on this planet. You don't have to think too hard to find where you could be useful. In some cases, you may have to think real hard. Now, I hope to address a lot of difficult cases here, but the suicidal case is a really tough one. And there is a pathway for you, too. What do King Shaul, Ahab, and Jonah all have in common? They showed reluctance to accept Yah's will. And that was the main thing I've been working on all these years, is to show that rejecting Yah's will is a terrific way to enter into depression. And most usually it is a commandment or an instruction. Now, there are other pathways, but usually it has something to do with a commandment or an instruction. Wrestling against Yah's will is self-destructing. Here are some of the symptoms of wrestling against Yah's will. You might be visited by grief or melancholy, further irrational behavior and violent outbursts, misplaced priorities. We have a painting here, an illustration of Shaul trying to kill David. Out of nowhere, you'll find it in the Bible, out of nowhere, he just picks up a spear and throws it at David. David's the guy who's comforting him with the music. King Shaul went on a lifetime rampage trying to kill David at one point. And numerous times, David had him in his clutches. He could have killed Shaul, but he said, nope, I'm not going to raise my hand against Yahweh's anointed. Bucking Yahweh's will is so terribly unwise, especially if you know that. Now, this is a difficult list, but I've resolved to go through it. Difficult things we may be compelled to accept. First thing on the list is his commandments. There are commandments that will propel us in a certain direction. There are commandments that will constrain us. If your will is operating outside that, and you're trying to wrestle with him, trying to make right something that you know is wrong, you will be visited by sorrow. Sooner or later. And now here's another one. The consequences of our sin. It's very hard to accept the consequences of our sin, especially if those consequences are far worse than we expected. And when we sin, every one of us makes a little deal in our mind. We make a little bargain in our mind. Yeah, I know this is wrong, but I'll handle the consequences. I'll deal with it. And then you find out it's way worse than you thought. That image there I chose, it's a GIF. That thing is called, that contraption is named Newton's cradle. And you can start from either side. You have a ball with some momentum, and it projects its momentum all the way to the other end. And so there's a direct consequence of our sins. It kind of symbolizes that. And sometimes those consequences recoil back on us. Like, oh, good grief, I didn't think it would go this far. I didn't think that sin would do this. I think that's a terrific metaphor for the consequences of our sins. And when that happens, we have to get on our knees and say, I blew it. I deserve this. I'll take whatever remedy you can give me. But if you fight, buck, and push and kick against the consequences of your sin without adequately coming to peace with Yahweh about it, that ball's going to keep coming back on you until you do. And once you confess your sin, you have to like figure out, well, how can I make the best of this situation that I've made? Time after time, point over point, I'm going to direct you to go right back to the throne. How about the consequences of other people's sins? The GIF I chose there was a running string of dominoes falling. This one has been very hard for me to get over. Now, I've never been brought to the point of depression, but doctrinally, practically, philosophically, I have suffered the consequences of other people's sins. And at times it has saddened me. It hasn't got me to the point of depression. I think, man, somebody way in the distance has done something that cascaded over and affected me. Here's one for you. They're often passing laws that will remediate the consequences of sin in society. You don't have to think too hard to come up with examples of that. Why am I paying extra taxes for somebody else's sin? But there's other things. There's the sins of our ancestors. And we have to go to Yahweh and confess the sins of our fathers. I think sometimes, too, it's a good idea to confess the sins of your mother. Some of these things are very hard to accept, and they may put us into a state of sorrow. And you got to go to Yahweh with it. Then there's time and chance. Time and chance happens to us all. Sometimes I'll use a personal example. A few Sabbaths ago, I got a flat tire on the way to picking up Terrell. And as I changed the tire there across the street, I told him about some of the people who were caught in traffic jams on September 11th. A number of people were caught in traffic jams on September 11th. They didn't make it to the towers. And when they found out what happened, they promised themselves they would never complain about a traffic jam or a delay again for the rest of their lives. Time and chance is a great way to cry out to Yahweh and say, I thank you, Father. I praise you for this delay. I thank you for this detour. Time and chance can happen to us all. But sometimes the consequences are big. And again, we have to go to him and say, what do I do about this? You own me. You own everything that happens to me. What do I do now? Sometimes we are angry at Yahweh because of the way we are made. I'm going to talk about this a bit. So there are people who made Mr. Machine, a toy that goes back to my era. There's a tiny number of people who know who Mr. Machine is. I had a Mr. Machine as a boy. And after a lot of turmoil in my family, we moved around a lot. I have to get over the fact that pieces were missing. Some people are like Ms. Pac-Man, like she's some kind of a glamour queen or something, huh? But we may have to realign our lives because of the way we are made. My consequences are kind of minor. My ancestry, through my dad primarily, I'm fighting biological forces I never even knew were coming. My dad didn't understand what hit him. If you saw a picture of my dad when he was my age, first you'd giggle because the faces are similar, right? And then the rest of my dad's body was being ravaged by Southside Chicago diet, rich foods. Let's talk about alt processing. I don't want to make this a health message, alt processing. A lot of talk today in the health world about alt processing. It's where the food is altered in a way that your body can only respond with massive insulin spikes in slow digestion. Alt processing means you can't do it in your kitchen. If you buy a food at the store that you could never do in your kitchen, I don't mean because you don't want to, but because you don't have the industrial ovens and the industrial chemicals. Alt processing foods will have a devastating effect on your health. And some people are more susceptible to that than others. Let's talk about the way we are made. This is a fellow, some of you probably heard about this guy. His name is Nick Vujicic. He was born with a rare disorder, no arms or limbs. His dad was a practicing pastor, practicing Christians. His Christian parents were shocked when he was born. It took him a long time to get over it. But they raised him as normally as possible. He became a motivational speaker. He's written 6 books. If you look in the lower right-hand corner of his image, you'll see what looks like a foot. He calls it his drumstick. There were toes on there that were webbed. His parents had a surgery so that the toes were separated. He developed dexterity there, and he types slightly above average for an untrained typist. Now, I've seen 2 videos of him doing motivational speeches. There might have been a video around here of him once, too. Come on, gang, I've been here 20 years and more. I can't remember everything, but at the end of his speeches, there'd be people lining up to congratulate him. Good job, Nick. But there was a lot of women in that line, and you could see the women just wanted so much to hug him because he radiated confidence. He radiated peace. He radiated joy. And he, too, is a practicing Christian. But I saw all those women. I mean, their faces were really lit up. They really wanted to hug this guy. And I thought, this guy's going to get married someday. I just knew it was going to happen. He's married. He's got 4 kids. From a biblical worldview, he found a way to find a meaningful life. We'll come back to him in a bit. There are times we fret against Yahweh for his will in our personal lives. And sometimes that will is ugly. Sometimes we have to make this course corrections. Sometimes he gives us a stop sign. Sometimes he gives us a speed limit, not so fast. Sometimes we have to make a turn in the road. I don't like using myself as an example. I probably said that many times. I remember the night I got the phone call from my sister in Chicago. My mother had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And I remember going for a walk there in Myerstown, Pennsylvania. I walked the streets that night, and I knew my life would be different. You know, guys, when I see scientists and engineers publishing big papers and making big inventions and changing the course of human history, I wonder how many wives and families have they neglected to publish those papers, to stay in the laboratory? For surely I have heard of engineers who got divorced because they worked too much at their job. Yahweh may direct us from a great career, wealth, fame, notoriety, so that we fulfill sacred duty. Now, that's more important. When somebody forsakes personal fulfillment for sacred duty, you can be sure the angels are watching. But for some of us, it will be hard to accept. We may go through a period of sorrow, depression, sadness. But it comes back to Yah's will. What does he want? Sometimes there's death of a vision. We have an image there of Jeremiah lamenting the fall of Jerusalem. Jerusalem had so much hope and promise. It was supposed to be the city on a hill. It was supposed to be a light to the nation. Remember the Psalms say, beautiful for situation or elevation. Beautiful for situation, the joy of the whole earth is Mount Zion on the sides of the north, the city of the great king. People from all over the world came to Jerusalem. There was life there. There was light. There was singing. There was dancing. The whole thing died. And it was Yahweh's will. Jeremiah had to get it out of his system with a book called Lamentations. We may experience some of our highest hopes and dreams die. And again, we have to go back to him and say, okay, your move. What do I do next? And then there are things that he takes from us. And I have to acknowledge, I heard about this guy, John C. Kirchner. I heard about him through Sister Liliana. This John Kirchner just passed away within the last few months. He wrote a book called Roll With Me. Let's talk about him. He had a debilitating accident at a young age. And he was a quadriplegic after that. Yeah, he was downcast for a while. But using a biblical perspective, he got over the initial melancholy, and he decided to pursue life with gusto. He thought, wait a minute, I really can do most things that other people can do. Most of the things I desire to do, I can still do. Now, that image there from the back of his book, I had to blow it up, and the granularity is poor. But if you look in the middle, he's skydiving. Just below that, you'll see him in a plane. There's other things there, too. He traveled the world. He ran a healthcare business for several years. He said, I'm an expert at this. I'm constantly in need of care. I know exactly what a good care worker looks like and what they don't. He ran a healthcare company for several years. You can read about his other exploits in his book. But instead of feeling sorry for himself, he thought, what can I do? In this situation I'm in, what can I do? So I've run through the whole list, but let's talk about other. What other things might be hard to accept? Persecution. There are situations where, around the world, where persecution's really stiff. Look, guys, you think you're being persecuted because you have to grovel to get Sabbath off. There's people on the other side of the world right now who only know about Yahshua a little bit, but they still get their heads cut off. That's a testimony to the people killing them. How about personal rejection? I don't know, maybe getting your head cut off is more preferable to rejection. Nobody likes to be brushed aside, especially for righteousness' sake. But this call is a call to righteousness. It's also a call to suffer for righteousness' sake. Yahshua, in my study so far, he's the only great teacher I know who said things that would push people away. You have to take up your gallows daily. Paul said as well, "I, because of Messiah, I die daily." Yahshua at the same time said that we would inherit brothers and sisters more than what we had prior to our conversion. That's why I'm so keen on us developing a priesthood, a nation, a family. And I know it's going to take time to develop that amongst us. But this was our reward for giving him our dedication. When people come here, they should know how we're going to behave. There should be a sense of safety here. Then there's that distance we have from loved ones who reject our faith. It's kind of painful. They have that distance there. Like, I want them to come along, but they won't. Now, for a lot of these cases, I've resolved to win them over, to be at peace with me. And I'm at peace with all of them now. Shortly after my mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, she still had her wits about her. She drove a car. She had, two bank accounts. She saw how me and the brethren at Frystown were getting along, and she said, "I want to join your religion." There was no occasion to have her baptized, but I did ask her right then and there. I said, "Mom, do you believe Yahshua walked out of his own grave?" And she says, "Oh, yeah, I believe that." I said, "Mom, that's very good." There was no way to disciple her. I'm hoping she gets some kind of a thief at Calvary break where her acknowledgement of the faith and her desire to join in was enough. One of my sisters did become baptized, entered the faith as we know it. And all the other relatives are at peace with me. But it wasn't always that way. It took a long time to lay siege to their hearts and let them know. I remember telling my dad, "This is a bargain for you, Dad. When others abandon you, the scriptures say I have to look after your needs." It took him a long time to figure that out. And one day he did. Here's another one. This is really hard. Then there's the shock, high-impact grief when those we love leave the faith. It could be a friend or a relative. But it's like a giant hole in the ground. Oof. These are things we're going to have to accept. Really, now, we don't want people hanging around who are not in the faith because they may take us down. In fact, I may have to soften up or cool my jets on this, but I have a special resentment for people who come here and pretend to be among us, but actually have freaky oddball doctrines, or they're trying to build a little discipleship thing for themselves. Well, I don't want anybody to leave, but if they're going to take us down, I got to have that distance there to protect us. But it's very hard to accept these things. I don't have it in the notes, but the scriptures say, getting back to King Shaul, Samuel prayed all night for Saul. It says he cried out all night. Well, I know what he was praying. He was praying for mercy, give him another chance, bring him back, straighten him out. It didn't do Saul a whole lot of good, but it did Samuel a whole lot of good. And there come times when we have to put such people into the hands of Yahweh, say, "You take care of it. I don't know what to do." Where you've prayed up all that you can. Then there's the loss of opportunity in our personal life because of the faith. I talked about that a moment ago, I suppose. But there are constraints on us. There's things going on Saturdays I can't do. I won't do. I don't need to do. Some of you know I'm part of that FEMA emergency response team. If my phone goes off on Sabbath, I'll respond to an emergency. But there are training events that I won't go to because they're optional. They're on Sabbath. Not going. But there's many other opportunities we miss out on. I want to put you all on alert. There's a temptation you're going to deal with. And you might sulk a while. But there are times you will be tempted to prepare on Saturday afternoon for an event that happens Saturday night. And you'll be tempted to throw your energies into preparing on Sabbath for something after Sabbath. The Sabbath is not a preparation day for the week from that standpoint. This one's big. I got to talk about this. I don't want to dwell on all this stuff, but I have to cover it. There are times it'll feel like Yahweh has misled you. Somebody's got to talk about it. It might as well be me. Some people run, they use their heart as a barometer of Yah's will. They follow their heart. Following your heart is not in the Bible. The only time it's in the Bible is when David told Nathan the prophet, he said, I want to build a temple. And Nathan said, Yahweh's with you. Do all that is in your heart. And that very night, Yahweh came to Nathan and said, no, you spoke on your own. You go back to David and tell him he's not going to build a temple. There's too much blood on his hands. That's the only time in the Bible somebody said, follow your heart. Following your heart is some of the most destructive advice you'll ever hear. There are times you feel that Yahweh put a vision in your heart, and you know there's something wrong with it, but you try to pursue it anyway. And when Yahweh redirects your life, you may take some serious prayer to heal the disappointment. Now, some of us here have been involved with religious organizations that broke our heart. Some of us can give you some teary-eyed stories of how people claimed to be part of Yahweh's plan or his kingdom, and they found out they weren't. And then there's this reality that so often Yahweh uses flawed people to accomplish his will. Make sure you are in tune with him. Time after time, those who survive are those who are connected to Yahweh and not to a man. There's this business of betrayal. I'm not into Catholic literature and legends and that. There's a book called Dante's Inferno. Well, that's one part of a larger work by Dante, but I found out that in his description of the Hollywood hell, as they call it, the Gehenna or whatever, we know that place doesn't exist. But interestingly, from the perspective of that author, the worst place for a punishment was reserved for those who betray others. Because it's devastating when you're betrayed, and I know that. Yahweh knows that too. The scriptures say if we know Yahweh well enough, bad things like that will not take us down. It'll sadden us, but they won't take us down. Point after point after point, we're confronted with the need to accept Yahweh's will, to accept his comforts, and to seek him and cling to him. Well, that's what I'm saying there in the last line. Can you commit yourself to his will, even if it is not what you want? Well, we made that commitment at the hour of baptism, didn't we? If you're not in this for the whole thing, you're not worthy. We're here to be priests, kings, brothers, sisters, representatives. Sometimes it's going to be very hard. So here are some ways of accepting Yah's will. One, three main things I want to talk about. One, learn from those who figured this out. And if multitude of counselors, there's deliverance. Study the works of those, conversations with those who've gotten over melancholy, sad times, disappointments, setbacks. Let us comfort one another with the comfort wherewith we've been comforted. Second, practice gratitude for what you have. People who learn gratitude, they have the winning hand. They see the blessings where we see destruction. It's been said Yahweh works in wonderful ways. In everything give thanks, it is written, for this is the will of Yahweh and the Messiah Yahshua concerning you. Something about thanksgiving, singing, praise in the face of difficulty and hardships turns the tide, and Yahweh reaches into his infinite bag of resources and presents us with answers we never thought were possible. Then from a practical standpoint, accept the worst, either now or in the future, and try to improve on that as a starting point. For example, I talked about David in the temple. When he was told he couldn't build the temple, what did he do? He says, okay, I can't build the temple. My son's going to do it. I'll build up all the materials for him and get those resources lined up so he can build a temple with that stuff. He says, okay, I can't do this, but I can do that. That's one example of many. Here's a book I would suggest you consider looking into. It's written by Dale Carnegie. Dale Carnegie is the guy who wrote How to Win Friends and Influence People. He had a book called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. In the introduction, he says that he found 22 books in the library on worms. 22 books in the library on worry and 198 books on worms. He says, why do we have more books on worms than worry? Because worry is a human plague. And some of the things I mentioned are in his book. But these are real practical steps. And if you're dealing with worry, which is the cousin of depression, you ought to consider some of the practical stuff in there. At times it reads like it was written by a Christian. There are some Christian principles in there. But in terms of learning from those who figured out how to overcome sorrow, grief, worry, you should give some thought to this practical book. This guy here again, Nick Vujicic. He said that he learned to give thanks for that drumstick. He called it a drumstick. He says, I have gratitude for everything, he said. I'm always giving thanks. He says, I'm even grateful for this drumstick. And he flapped it on the stage. For all these cases that I would cite, giving thanks and praise to Yahweh in the spite of it, that was the power weapon for them. He wrote 6 books. Here's the cover for 4 of them. Most of us have written no books. No arms, no legs. This guy's written 6. Now, these are books about how to overcome great barriers. And he approaches life from a biblical perspective. Here's more tips on how to overcome sorrow, melancholy, depression. Stop coveting. A lot of people are grieved because of what they don't have. Matthew 19:21-22, Yahshua said unto him, if thou wilt be perfect, this is that rich young ruler, go and sell what you have and give to the poor, and you shall have treasure in heaven and come and follow me. But when the young man heard that saying, he went away sorrowful, depressed, downcast, for he had great possessions. Again, surrendering to his will. Surrender. Say, okay, your move. What do I do from this point? Give everything to him and start over. Now, there's another famous book out there written by a Christian missionary. He was fretting over how the natives to whom he was ministering and gave so much, they were stealing his pineapples. How many people here have heard of the pineapple story? Sister Brooke? Oh, Andy seen it, Sister Margie, a great story about surrendering to Yah's will. I get choked up thinking about it. Yahweh has resources you don't even know about if you surrender to his will. Okay, the cousins of depression, grief and worry. I'm going to talk about those a little bit. Yahshua said, blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted. I've already made allowance for mourning, as the Bible does. It says there is a time to mourn. But the ancient people put limits on their time to grieve. And here's a typo. Jephthah's daughter, she learned that she would not bear children. We're not sure how that played out. But when she found out her dad made her a special sacrifice, most of us, I believe what he meant is that she would remain a virgin all her life. It certainly is what happened. She mourned for 2 months, not 1 month. Her and her girlfriends mourned the hills of Israel for 2 months over her perpetual virginity. Now, Israel mourned the death of Moses 30 days. They mourned the death of Joseph 7 days, way back in Genesis. And they mourned the loss of Aaron 30 days. So for Jephthah's daughter to do it for 2 months, please forgive the typo, that meant her grief was like double all these other cases. Mourning is a natural part of life, but they put limits on it. Now, these limits don't mean you necessarily got over it, but it means you're functional. For me, it took me, 15 months to get over the loss of my mom. Getting over the loss, that was the big one. Getting over the loss of my dad took several months. Maybe I can ask the control room to zoom in on my face. I don't know if that's appropriate, but here, see this? Okay? This is the face of a dumbbell, okay? After my baptism, I promptly started a dating relationship with an atheist. Make a note of it, okay? So, yeah, it gives a whole new meaning to the words missionary dating. Okay, when that thing fell through, by the way, I thought Yahweh might be in it, okay? Here I am many years later. I have a strong position against seeking signs and omens. Her last name was Subotnik. Well, in Russian, Sobota means Sabbath, Saturday. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is like some kind of sign. I found out what Subotnik was. In the Russian, years later, I found out what it was. In the communist culture, they had one Saturday every year, everybody had to work without pay. Okay. So was it a sign that her, you know, this was in her name? It's a preposterous way to manage your life with signs, omens, and things like that. I urge everybody to forsake that. Anyway, when we broke up, I sat down and thought, she isn't worth grieving over. I'm going to grieve over this for one day. Come on, y'all. You know what it is to be bummed out when you break up with somebody. I said, I'm only going to grieve one day. So the next day, I felt like upside down, inside out, yucky. But the next morning after that, I woke up and it was all out of my mind. So evidently, we can control these things. We can say, look, I'm only going to worry about it this much, and that's it. And we should put limits on how much we're going to grieve and mourn over something. It should be appropriate. Perpetual grief and melancholy over a loss is foreign to Yahweh's spirit. I want to talk about this a little more, resisting his comforts. Some have reported to clinging to grief as a final connection to what they cherished. I talk to people who've done this. They still want to grieve. They still want to mourn because there's a little sentiment still lingering around there. You can find yourself in a situation in which the loss dominates your thinking and actions, such as talking to the dead. For my dear mom, there was always a sense of melancholy, even at her best times. I didn't find out till later in her life what that was all about. My poor mom, she lost her parents at a young age. She got into the habit of talking to them after they died. You're not supposed to talk to the dead. I know there'll be a momentary comfort there, but you're not supposed to do that because that takes on a life of its own. And there was a time when I was in the occult, and there were people scientifically investigating the paranormal, and they said, don't talk to the dead. Even people are studying these freaky things from a scientific standpoint says, don't do that. Don't do that. You don't talk to the dead. I had no idea my mother had been doing this all her life. But if you choose grief over Yahweh's comforts, you'll have vain attempts to live out a fantasy in your own reality. Now, look, many of us as kids, including me, we had imaginary dogs and imaginary playmates. A lot of us have had that. But you're supposed to outgrow that stuff. If you reject Yahweh's comforts and embrace the grief, just because it creates a little connection to a memory or a sentiment, it'll prolong the melancholy. Yahweh doesn't want this. And the counterparties connected to this loss would not want you in this condition either. In many cases, for example, if you're abandoned by someone close to you, in many cases, they wouldn't give a rip anyway. Do not resist Yahweh's comforts. They are within reach through prayer. They really are within reach through prayer. You may have to go back and pray many times. But that's something universally known. You go to Yahweh with your grief, and you'll find comfort there. Let's talk about worry. We got to repeat Yahshua's commands. Therefore, I say unto you, Matthew 6:25, be not anxious for your life or what you'll eat or what you shall drink, nor yet for your body what you shall put on. Is not the life more than meat and the body more than raiment? Behold the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns, yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are you not much better than they? Which of you, while anxious, can add one cubit unto his stature? And why are you anxious about clothes? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin, and yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his dignity was not arrayed like one of these. Wherefore, if Elohim so clothes the grass of the field, which today is, and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or wherewithal shall we be clothed? For after these things do the Gentiles seek, for your heavenly Father knoweth you have need of these things. But seek ye first his kingdom and righteousness, and then all these things shall be added unto you. There's a reality here we have to come to terms with, we have to come to grips with. Think back, recall when I said that we are to consider the worst and accept it and then try to improve from there. Here is your starting point. Here's your low mark. 1 Timothy 6:8. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. Now I have resolved to be content with food and clothing. I pray Yahweh does not tempt me or send me temptation in this regard. But this is an Israelite vow too. When Jacob, also named Israel, when he was traveling, he made a vow to Yahweh. He said, if you get me safely on this travel and get me back home safely and give me food and clothing, then you will be my Elohim, Yahweh, and I will pay tithes. Now, his vow to tithe is incumbent upon us. But notice, all he asked for was food and clothing. He didn't ask for a fancy house or anything like that. And we even find this in Yahshua's ministry. Remember that guy came up to him and said, I'll follow you wherever you go. And Yahshua said, hey, bud, the Son of Man doesn't even have a roof over his head. I have nowhere to lay my head. That's what he said. Nowhere to lay my head. Some people will slip that in there. They say, well, I need food, clothing, and shelter. But that's nowhere mentioned in the Bible. Are we, as disciples of Yahshua, willing to have situations where we don't have a roof over our head? Well, it's happened to me. Maybe it's happened to you. Are you willing to commit to being content with food and clothing? If you're in the covenant, you've already made that deal. When you commit yourself to this Israelite messianic perspective, the load gets lighter. I just got to spend some time talking about the folly of forgiving yourself. Yeah, this is something I'm kind of wound up over because I've seen it destroy so many people. 1 John 1:9, if we confess our sins, he above is faithful and just to forgive our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Question, who are you to think your lack of self-forgiveness can put on hold Yah's forgiveness? As if to overrule his spirit. Now, I've heard this. People say, oh, I just can't forgive myself. Or worse yet, they say, he can't forgive me. There's no way he can forgive me. You can't overrule his mercies. And for those of you who have been struggling with this idea, he can't forgive me, I did the big one, or I can't forgive myself, you're going to have to just get over it. You cannot presume to overrule his eternal mercy. Back east, the lovely testimony of a lady decades ago, when she was a hippie girl, she had committed an abortion. And she was visited by such grief, depths of sorrow and depression. And somewhere in that death spiral of sorrow and melancholy, Yahweh touched her. She thought about it. She said, there's got to be someone in this universe with the authority to forgive me. There's got to be someone in this vast universe who can forgive me. And after that, she met Yahweh's people back east. And she found forgiveness for that sin. She knew there's somebody up there who can forgive me for this. And she managed to come to peace, come to grace, come to repentance. Well, whatever you're into, whatever melancholy you're experiencing, Yahweh doesn't want you there. He wants you out of it. There's no glory for him if you're wallowing in sorrow and depression. Grieving over your sin for a while is quite normal, but not if it is used to veto his grace. We're almost done. I'm going to say a word on hopeless cases, because I don't have the answers for everything, but I would like to speak to hopeless cases. Using a biblical worldview, we have seen even quadriplegics build a new life based on gratitude, contentment with food and clothing, and they have built from there. You can too. If your situation is so depleted, this is serious now. If your situation is so depleted, where you are dependent on others and lacking pathways of life improvement, because there are some really difficult cases there. Number one, I want you to remember we're all destined for that. Everybody in this room, unless you're rich, I don't know anybody rich here. We are all destined to be at a place where we are dependent on others for our care, where our options are limited. I'm headed there. I've seen others go there. We're all going to be in a place where we're counting on others to look after us. Historically, it was recorded that John the Apostle was carried around on a pallet at the end of his life. People are going to be carrying all of us around at some point. Some of us get to that place sooner than others. So here's what I have to offer you. Number two, find creative ways to express gratitude to your caregivers. They need it. At the average nursing home, they got people screaming at them, yelling at them. They're overworked, underpaid. You can be a light to them. You can be an oasis wherever you are. It doesn't necessarily have to be a nursing home or a hospital. When you develop that attitude of gratefulness, you'll be an oasis, a sanctuary for those who are overworked and overpaid. Learn to express gratitude to them. They need it. They need to know that they matter. You might even connect with these people. You might even begin to get to know them and they get to know you. You might learn something from each other about life. And finally, remember from the sheep and the goats. It's a prophecy Yahshua gave us for the day of reckoning for the nations. Their kindness to us will lead to an eternal reward for them. I can't describe it. And you can't game the system. You can't go to people and say, hey, listen, if you help me, I'll get you in. Can't do that. Okay, you can't do that. It's got to be a secret. Yahshua in that parable describes us as hungry, needing clothes and food, sick, in prison. It's not a very popular profile, but that's something some of us, maybe all of us at some day, are going to be in. And these people who show kindness to us, what happens is Yahweh puts grace upon them. They're empowered to be nice to us. And then they have a choice deep inside. They have a choice to follow that prompting, which means they go with the goats later. Or they follow that prompting and they go with the sheep, or they reject that prompting and go with the goats. And come on, friends, so many of us have testimonies of people who out of nowhere showed us unexpected kindness. I got stories like that, I'm sure you have too. But even in our times of deepest need, we are a conduit of blessing to the world around us. And it is one of many ways in which Yahweh will fulfill the promise to Abraham that through thy seed all the nations of the world will be blessed. And you can be a conduit of that too, even when your options are limited and you're in a place of great neediness. Okay, summary. Mood swings are a normal part of life. Jose, get ready. Okay, one major cause of depression is an unwillingness to accept Yah's will, including his commandments, including covetousness, disappointments, false expectations. Grief is normal too, but must have boundaries. Holding on to grief feels good in the short term, but it has terrible long-term consequences to you and those around you. There must come a point when you decide you don't want to be depressed. Prayer is a power weapon. You must want his comforts, and you must not reject those comforts, especially if he reveals at the same time that things may not go your way. You might be tempted to say, no, I don't want to be comforted. I want to worry more about this. You've got to receive his comforts when he gives them to you. And finally, with food and raiment, let us be there with content. Thank you so much for your time and your attention and your patience. Hallelujah.